Get ready to hear the truth about America on a show that's not immune to the facts with your host, Dan Bongino.
It's almost as if the media cannot help themselves. It's not almost as if the media can't help themselves. They can't. They cannot help themselves. The lies, the misdirection, the gaslighting, it never stops. Folks, I've got some just mind-blowing stories about some of the stupidity they want you to believe we're going to call out. I've got that. I've got Super Tuesday coverage. I've got another development, one of these Spygate players who just reemerges on the scene again. Again, everybody knows each other, as I always tell you. Today's show is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Stop putting your online data at risk. Get protected with ExpressVPN.com/Bongino today. Welcome to the Dan Bongino Show. Producer Joe, how are you today? Fine, sir.
Well, I'm doing well and getting ready for more news from the Department of Redundancy Department here. Yeah, you know?
It's always with the media. So now, I know I sent you a video before the show we're going to use about Nanny Bloomberg, too. I didn't even tease that. Nanny Bloomberg basically saying, hey, your Second Amendment rights are irrelevant, but I certainly matter because I'm really rich. Yes, I got that. Joe is horrified. I'm not kidding. Before the show, he's like, did you see that stupid video? All right, let's get right to it. Today's show brought to you by Simply Save. Home security. There's no two ways you can go about protecting your home. There's two ways you can go about to protecting your home. This is a traditional way where you wait weeks for a technician to do a messy install that costs a small fortune. No good. Terrible. Or there's the other way, our way, the Bongino way, the way we prefer in our house, and I have a background in security. Simply Save is everything you need in a home security system. That's the best way. It's award-winning protection. The two-time winner of CNET Editor's Choice Award. Simply Safe blankets your home in safety. You get comprehensive protection for your entire house. Outdoor cameras and doorbells alert you to anyone approaching your home. We love that feature. Entry motion and glass break sensors guard the inside. It is a fortress with Simply Safe. You barely notice it's there. But what's really remarkable is you can set up this system all by yourself. Paula did it. Paula, did you not do it? Took about an hour and a half. It was it. Paula did it. I was sleeping that night. I'm sorry, but that's the way it went down. It takes about 30 minutes to an hour, tops. That's absolutely there's no trade-offs to your safety. My house is pretty big, so it took a little bit longer, but it was super easy. You'll have an army of highly trained security experts ready to dispatch police to your home at a moment's notice 24/7. It's only 50 cents a day with no contracts. It's why The Verge calls Simply Safe the best home security system. We had it in our other house we moved from too. That was even quicker. She set that up in like 20 minutes. Go to simplysafe.com/Dan Bongino today, and you'll get a free shipping and 60-day risk-free trial. You got nothing to lose. Go now. Be sure to go to simplysafe.com/Dan Bongino. That's simplysafe, S-I-M-P-L-I, safe.com/Dan Bongino today. Check it out. All right, Joe, let's go. The bell is back. Yeah. So as I told you, the media loves to tailor a narrative. The media, what has been our motto for the show with regards to media coverage from day one? It has been that the media is not telling you the story. They're telling you a story. Now, the way the media does this is, you know, very simply in some cases by just lying to you. For instance, collusion is real, Spygate's a hoax, that kind of stuff. But they also could be more devious, as we saw with their coverage of the financial ramifications in the markets from the coronavirus outbreak. Mm. Sometimes, Joe, it's not just what they say, but it's what they don't say. Now, hat tip to Ari Fleischer, who put this out on his Twitter account. I saw this morning. I want you to pay particular attention to the covers of the New York Times over the past few days. Now, as you know, there was some significant financial markets fallout from the coronavirus. There were some big point-wise dips in the stock market because of the fear factor. People just, you know, are generally just trying to process how bad is corona? Is it going to hit us? Is it going to hit us here? So there's a fear factor, understandably so. Notice how the New York Times put up cover one. Covers this, when was it? February 28th. Front page story, New York Times. Stocks take dive not seen since 2011 over virus crisis. Top right corner, New York Times, making sure everybody sees this on their front page because, you know, they're the New York Times. They're telling you supposedly the story when they're really telling you a story. What was the a story they're trying to tell you? Trump's really sucks. Look at all this stuff that's happening. Bad stuff. You're losing money because of Trump and his handling of the virus. Let's look at New York Times cover number two. Wall Street suffers its worst week since 2008 as virus angst grows. Ladies and gentlemen, you should be afraid. Oh, you should be very afraid.
Oh, no.
It's happening right now. Oh, look at this, though.
No.
This is fascinating. So yesterday we see a massive rebound. Listen, I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not giving anyone financial advice. I'm simply telling you it's my show, my experience. I buy the dips. I buy the dips every time because I believe in the power of the American economy. I did very well yesterday. Very well. Unfortunately, and I say unfortunately because I take no joy in saying this, a lot of people sold their stocks to me yesterday very cheaply, and I wish you hadn't done that. I'm not kidding. I'm not being funny or there's nothing to joke about. I really wish that didn't happen, but I'm not going to let the stock market tank. I'm sorry. I don't believe that the stock market, the dip was in any way commensurate with the threat we suffer from this virus. Now, look, the stock market rebounds yesterday, 1,300 points. Wait, Paul, I'm looking. I'm trying to look. Can you help me out here? Your eyes are better than mine. Do you see anything on that New York, Joe, is there anything on that New York Times front page about the largest point gain we've seen in modern times?
I don't see anything, boss.
And a pretty substantial percentage gain. I don't see it either, Joe. Nowhere to be found. Again, getting back to my very simple point, ladies and gentlemen, that when it comes to media analysis, you are not getting the story, you are getting a story. And it's not just the lies, it's the omissions too. All right, I got a lot to get through. I just want to leave that there so you understand what's going on.
All right.
Knowledge is power. Ignorance is not bliss, ever, only for media types. Now, showing you again, here's a clown from the Washington Post who hysterically is alleged to be a fact checker, the just inimitable for all the wrong reasons, Glenn Kessler. This guy's supposed to be a fact checker. He puts this out yesterday in the Washington Post. I'm going to get to this story a little later, but again, this block is about the media coverage only. I'll get to the core of this story about Burisma later on in the show, which is fascinating in and of itself. Alleged fact checker at the Washington Post, Glenn Kessler, tweets out, Joe Biden suddenly comes back from the political dead on Saturday, you know, winning South Carolina in the primaries, you all know. And the very next day, Republican Senator Ron Johnson pens a letter seeking subpoenas on Burisma. Must be a coincidence. He's responding to a tweet by Catherine Herridge, who actually showed the letter. Okay, so again, this is, folks, this is supposed to be the fact checker at the Democracy Dies in the Darkness Washington Post. They are the darkness, of course. The fact checker. Let's understand what his premise is, because this story is going to matter later in the show when I tell you what's really going on here, because this is serious stuff. Republican Senator Ron Johnson, who's very concerned about the Biden corruption in Ukraine and corruption in general over there, has sent a letter demanding that they talk to this person from Blue Star Strategies. They were working with Burisma to try and put a gloss on what Burisma, Hunter Biden's company, that he was working on the board of, was doing. Everybody clear?
Yeah.
That's the letter. The fact checker from the Post is alleging that that letter was sent after the South Carolina primary win by Joe Biden to cut him off at the knees, Joe, to stop his momentum. Hat tip to Catherine Herridge, who has some highlights on it. We really enjoy her Twitter account. Let's read the actual letter. Joe, keep in mind, what was the date of the South Carolina primary? It was February 29th.
Yeah.
So we look at this letter, and Glenn Kessler from the Washington Post, who's really not that bright, must have seen the date at the top of this letter, March 1st, and said, oh my gosh, look at this. Keep that up if you don't mind here. The letter is sent the day after the primary. What a kick in the... you know it, to Joe Biden. This is clearly political. Mm-hmm. Except Glenn can't read, because if he actually read the letter, Joe, and went even a paragraph down, you would see, again, hat tip Catherine Herridge, you would have read that, this is from Senator Ron Johnson, on February 24th of 2020, I notified the ranking member of my intent to issue a subpoena. Now, Joe, just checking here, because again, Glenn Kessler from the Washington Post obviously can't read. Is February, I know after yesterday, I'm a little hesitant to do this, but this should be a grounder. This is a bunt. I'm just messing with you. If the South Carolina primary is on February 29th, and Ron Johnson sent the subpoena on February 24th, is it in any way possible that he sent the subpoena after the South Carolina primary? The answer, of course,
I don't think so.
No. All you had to do was read the second paragraph. But of course, because Glenn Kessler's not that bright, he didn't get to the second paragraph and just read the letter at the top, not the date of the actual subpoena. Hat tip to Sean Davis from The Federalist, who pointed this out in his Twitter feed. Again, folks, beating up on the media, as Joe said before the show, does become redundant. But ladies and gentlemen, it is necessary, and it's necessary for a very simple reason. We have an election coming up. Some of your friends, your moderate friends who may be predisposed to voting for a Democrat, but could be convinced to support a Republican during this election, will buy this nonsense. It is up to you. You're the leaders we've been waiting for. As my friend Ginny Thomas always says, you're it. You have to go out there and be the advocates and stop this nonsense before it takes hold and does any political damage. No, this letter was sent before the primary. It could not have been a reaction to a February 29th primary if the subpoena was sent on February 24th.
Right.
But remember, democracy dies in the darkness. All right, Tuesday's always a loaded day. Always appreciate your patience. We get a lot of interest. Let me just get to our second sponsor, Parler. We love Parler. We covered that story yesterday about tech tyranny going on out there. You know, these social media companies are desperate to shut you down. I have Parler, have it on my phone right now. Love Parler. I've had them for a long time, way before they were a sponsor. Parler is your answer to speech suppression and all of this nonsense because they do not silence conservative voices. They don't. Twitter does that all the time. Conservative voices are silenced daily by left-wing tech companies who profit off exploiting your privacy and silence your voice when you need to say something they don't agree with. More and more of our sacred right, the right to speak freely, has come under assault in places that were designed for us to share our opinions freely. And with no other options, you're forced to play by their rules. But you do have options now. Parler, P-A-R-L-E-R. Get over there today. I'm at DBongino. Give me a follow. I had it long before. Download the app. Simply download the app, create your account, post, share, and speak freely. Can you say anything you want? Well, listen, you can't threaten violence. Obviously, nobody wants that. Commit actual acts of hate. Nobody wants that either. You can't harass people. But outside of that, that's not who they are. If it's free speech related and it doesn't meet any of those horrible conditions, obviously, you are free to post away. Go to Parler.com or visit the App Store to download Parler today. I'm on Parler. Follow me. I'm at DBongino. That's P-A-R-L-E-R.com. Find them in the App Store today. Parler. Get news. Speak free. Do it today. Support Parler. Parler.com. Okay. Thanks, sir. I always appreciate your patience, Joey. Folks, again, Joe's butt. Spit it out, Dan. Joe's name was in my head there. Tuesday's always loaded. Okay, let's get to this. This is important. So Joe Biden yesterday got a number of big endorsements. Pete Buttigieg dropped out. Amy Klobuchar dropped out. Beto O'Rourke, who had dropped out a long time ago, also reappeared on the scene yesterday. And I want to show you again, this is going to be my Super Tuesday California coverage block, because California is the largest portion of the Super Tuesday delegates. But here's what's going on with Joe Biden right now. He is getting desperate. He understands Bernie Sanders is a real threat to him. So he is now foregoing any of this nonsensical, I'm the moderate, safe choice candidate. He's trying to siphon off Bernie support. He made one of those moves yesterday by recruiting into his campaign Beto, failed presidential candidate, failed Senate candidate as well. Here's video of Joe Biden saying something very frightening, ladies and gentlemen. I pointed out video of Biden yesterday, again, a moderate, air quotes, candidate, who is telling you straight to your face, you want your taxes raised? I'm your guy. We played that yesterday on the show. Here is him unofficially anointing Beto O'Rourke as the new czar of his firearm policy committee. Check this out. This should frighten everyone. This is Beto, by the way, of the "You're damn right, I'm going to take your AR-15 infamy." Check this out.
I'm going to guarantee you this is not last year's seeing of this guy. You're going to take care of the gun problem with me. You're going to be the one that leads this effort. I'm counting on you. I'm counting on you. We need you badly. The state needs you. The country needs you. You're the best. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
He's not the best. He was actually like the 18th best in the Democrat field. That's why he is endorsing and not running anymore yeah. himself. But hey, listen, whatever, to each his own. Folks, Biden is not a moderate. Please stop the insanity. Stop the nonsense. Biden is not a moderate. He has never been a moderate. He is a far left liberal hack who pretends to be a moderate, who is now foregoing that to try to eat into the Bernie Sanders lead. I played him on taxes yesterday. I'm playing him on guns today. You want Beto? Remember Beto? Hell yeah, I'm going to take your AR-15. Yeah. That guy is going to be in charge of national firearm policy. Listen, you heard it. It's not my words. It's Biden's words. That's the guy. What's going on here? Let's talk about this in context of what's going to happen today, Super Tuesday. Super Tuesday is an enormous footprint on the Democrat primary. There are a large swath of Democrat delegates are at stake today. Now, let's do the math. There are a total of 3,979 delegates at stake overall in the Democratic primary for president. Clear? The majority of that is 1,991. That's what you need to be the Democrat nominee for president. You need 1,991 pledged delegates to your campaign, 1,991. Here's the issue we're going to have today. In context of that quote, why Biden's freaking out about Bernie and going far left and really foregoing the moderate lane now. I'm going to raise your taxes. Beto's going to take your guns. Next thing it'll be, he'll be supporting Medicaid for all. That'll be the next. Folks, Bernie's, they got a big lead in California, a huge lead. California, of the 1,991 delegates you need, Paula and Joe, keep me on my math here. If this doesn't make sense, slow me down. 415 of those delegates are in California.
Ooh.
Think about that. Think about that. That is a huge, huge chunk. Now, having said that, the second biggest prize today is Texas with 215 delegates. Now, you may say to yourself, with a population size comparable to California, not as big, but comparable, why does Texas only have half the delegates? I'm not trying to bore you. This is important stuff in this election cycle. The reason is the amount of delegates are not only directly related to the population of the state, but it's also related to the percentage by which they vote Democrat in presidential elections. You get it?
Yeah.
So you could have a California, you could have like West California with the same size, and if it only votes 20%, 80% Republican, they would have probably a quarter or something of delegates. So it's not just the population, it's how Democrat-leaning the state is. Obviously, California being the biggest state and the biggest Democrat state with Democrat voters, they get the biggest prize, 415, and Texas gets 215. Having said that, both of them present significant challenges right now for Biden. Biden's lead in Texas right now, hence the recruiting of Beto, a Texas candidate who performed well in the Senate race against Cruz. There's no doubting that. He lost, but he did perform well. You know, we can't just diminish it like liberals do. We have to do facts here, unlike liberal adamantium-coated skull liberals who don't do facts. Follow me. But Bernie's way ahead in California. California has been early voting for a long time now. Ladies and gentlemen, the fact that Biden got these big endorsements yesterday from Beto, Buttigieg, and Klobuchar doesn't matter if you already early voted.
Mm.
As a matter of fact, some of those early votes may already have been wasted. Why? Because those Klobuchar, Buttigieg votes that the endorsements by Klobuchar and Buttigieg, the endorsements, hey, go vote for Biden now, are already over. Because upwards of maybe 40, 50% of California has already voted and some of those boxes have already been checked for Klobuchar and Buttigieg. So it doesn't matter who they endorse. It's already a waste. Ladies and gentlemen, when you pull your name out of the president, when you suspend your presidential campaign, your name doesn't come off the ballot. If you're on the ballot in these states, it's past the deadline. Your name is there. There are people who will go in tomorrow who may not have even seen the news, who may vote for Klobuchar tomorrow, even though she pulled out. Buttigieg too. Early voting is huge. Now, this is why California is a huge problem for Biden. And again, why he's taken this far left turn. To win in California, any delegates at all of this massive 415 delegate pile of D's. You, sorry, old friend of mine, bad joke. To win any, what? I know, Paul's like, I don't get it. Nobody does. If you knew my friend Tom, you get it. To win any portion of the delegates, you have to do two things. You have to get 15% of the statewide vote to get any portion of the statewide allocated delegates. Now, track me. There's 415 total in California.
All right.
144 of those, that's right, 144 are allocated on a statewide basis. The rest are allocated by who wins the congressional districts. I believe they have 53 in California. To get any of those 144 delegates statewide, you have to get 15% of the vote or you get nothing, zero. What's the problem, folks? There's only one candidate, only one polling above 15% in California, Bernie. Can you imagine if due to early voting, despite all the endorsements and the Biden momentum he's got, can you imagine now if Bernie's the only one and he cleans up all 140, almost 10% of what he needs to get to the nomination on the statewide level? Now, the rest of the delegates are allocated by congressional districts, how each district votes, those 53 districts. You have to get 15% in the districts to get those delegates in the districts too. Turns out by the polls, Joe Bernie's ahead in almost all the districts too. Big time. Folks, Joe Biden is in big trouble. Huge trouble. This momentum and Klobuchar and Buttigieg and Beto and the endorsements may have come a little bit too late. This may have been a tactical catastrophe for Biden. Now, he can save himself in Texas, which is also proportional. He's polling, from what I've seen, between 2 and 5 points ahead of Bernie in Texas. He could do well over there. I'm going to leave it at this, though. Early voting matters. That 15% threshold, keep your eye on that in California. Because if he cleans up the congressional districts and statewide Bernie and is the only one who meets that threshold, I'm telling you right now, he will be an unstoppable force and we will be dealing with a disaster. We'll be dealing with a devout socialist with a major party nomination for the presidency of the United States. Of course, we'll be back tomorrow with detailed analysis of what happened. But Joe Biden could be in real trouble. We'll see how he performs. He's doing quite well. He got a boost from these endorsements in a couple of the other states. Mm-hmm. He may do well in North Carolina, Oklahoma, and elsewhere. But California is the golden egg here. And these endorsements may have come too late, ladies and gentlemen. Upwards of 50% of Californians may have already voted for candidates that aren't even in the race anymore. Devastating. Okay. I've got some video on Bloomberg. Before I get to that, get a little more sponsor here. Folks, Bloomberg just in one of the, this guy is so not charismatic. It's unbelievable. This is one of the most, this is what I was telling you, Joe was talking to me before the show about. One of the most out-of-touch elitist snob candidates we've ever seen. He basically flips the double-barreled middle finger to America with this ridiculous quote. Today's show also brought to you by buddies at NetSuite. We use NetSuite here. We'd be lost without it. Ladies and gentlemen, Bongino Inc. has to run every day. Thankfully, Paula takes care of it for us, most of it, but it would be hard without NetSuite. We need our HR, our finance. We need our numbers in one spot because if you don't know your bottom line, you don't know your business. What are companies like Ring, Hint, and Tecovas all have in common? They all use NetSuite to accelerate their growth. Don't let your business partners out or your business competitors out-compete you because they have NetSuite and you don't. It's a huge mistake. Successful companies know in order to grow faster, you need the right tools. You want to take your company from 2 to 10 million or 10 million to hundreds of millions in revenue, NetSuite by Oracle gives you the tools to turbocharge your growth. With NetSuite, you get a full picture of your business like we do. Finance, inventory, HR, customers, and more. This was very complicated. We had everything in different spots, not now with NetSuite. It's super easy with NetSuite. You have everything you need to grow all in one spot from your phone or your computer. You can't beat that. It gives you the visibility and control you need to make the right decisions and grow with confidence. Get a load of this. Did you know this? NetSuite customers grow faster than the S&P 500, and it's the world's number one cloud business system, trusted by more than 19,000 companies because it works and it's easy to use. It's the last system you'll ever need. NetSuite, business grows here. Schedule your free product tour right now. Receive your free guide, 6 ways to run a more profitable business. It's a great guide, by the way, at netsuite.com/Bongino. That's netsuite.com/Bongino. NetSuite.com/Bongino, B-O-N-G-I-N-O. Go today. Don't let your competitors beat you to the punch. NetSuite.com/Bongino. Okay. So Bloomberg was at a town hall yesterday on Fox. And I've got to tell you, again, I'm trying not to make it personal with these candidates, but it's hard because they personally want to impact my life and take away my firearms, my wallet, my job, my prosperity, any, you know, shot I have at my kids getting an education because they don't believe in school choice or anything like that either, which always deeply offends me for reasons outside of the scope of this conversation. But Bloomberg has been a disaster on the Second Amendment and your right to protect yourself. I want to play this quickly. This is a gentleman at this town hall yesterday on Fox, gets up, apparently he was a Tulsi Gabbard supporter, and he asked Bloomberg a very simple question about the Second Amendment. And hey, why do your rights, because you're a rich billionaire, matter more than mine? Listen to the question and listen to what I'm telling you is one of the worst answers I have ever seen on a town hall or debate stage. I am not kidding, in decades. This is a horror show. Check this out.
How do you justify pushing for more gun control when you have an armed security detail that is likely equipped with the same firearms and magazines that you seek to ban the common citizen from owning? Does your life matter more than mine or my family's or these people's?
All right. Look, I probably get 40 or 50 threats every week, okay? And some of them are real. That just happens when you're the mayor of New York City or you're very wealthy and if you're campaigning for president of the United States, you get lots of threats. So I have a security detail. I pay for it all myself. And, you know, they're all retired police officers who are very well trained in firearms.
Unbelievable.
You hear it?
Unbelievable.
But you think? Now, folks, hold on.
Yeah.
I got to think of the thing because I need that. I don't want to like lose it on this and lose the profound elitist snobbery of what he just said. Folks, I was a police officer for a while. 1995 to 99, I was a cadet for 2 years, police officer for two of those years as well. Again, not a deep, long career in uniform law enforcement. I spent the rest of my time in the Secret Service. But I worked in a very, I'm telling you a story for a reason, okay? I don't like sob stories or horror stories.
That's all right.
I don't do that a
background.
Lot.
Yeah,
but this
good.
Story is going to matter. I was a police officer in the 7-5 precinct in East New York, Brooklyn. The 7-5 precinct was a very, very tough place to work. And I'm being nice by saying that. A very tough place. There are Netflix specials literally about the 7-5 called the 7-5. About how bad the 7-5 precinct crime-wise really was. Having said that, it encompasses East New York, Brooklyn. Why I got there is a long story. It was a punishment for screwing up as a cadet. I signed this a chief out of a log on accident one time, and people can be very petty, and I heard it was punishment, so they sent me, instead of the Queens North where I wanted to go, they sent me to Brooklyn North in the 7-5 precinct as kind of a, we'll show you. I mean, I thought it was kind of petty, but whatever. Having said that, I don't regret the experience one bit. It was the busiest, and by I mean crime-wise, busiest precinct in New York City at the time. Some of the experiences there changed my life. I wrote about one of the experiences in many of my books. I remember went to this kid late at night one time. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning. Kid was probably like 9 or 10. And ironically, not having kids at the time myself, you know, it's crazy. You're gonna laugh. You're gonna think this is really stupid. I didn't even think there was anything unusual about like a 9 or 10 year old being out on the street because it happens so often over there at that time of night. Mm-hmm. So I walked the kid home and I'm talking to him. I tell this story at speeches sometimes. And he says to me, I said, so what do you want to do when you grow up? You know, he's making small talk with the kid. The kid said, oh, I want to be like AZ. And I said, oh, you know, interesting. You know, Jay-Z, who was an up and coming at the time, Brooklyn rapper. Now he's married to Beyonce. But back then he wasn't as big of a deal as he is now. And he said, no, that's not what I said. I want to be like AZ. And it took me a minute to process it. And AZ was a local like drug dealer rapper who used to do, you know, in the projects used to do like shows there. And I thought to myself, this poor kid's America is totally not the America you and I know. Like he had no sense of chronology or his life ahead of him or what he wanted to do. It was all what was right in front of him that very given day. And the fact that his idol wasn't even Jay-Z, but this loser AZ said to me that we'd failed this kid. We had totally failed this kid. It was sad. I still talk about that story to this day because it was so devastating. I went home that night and couldn't believe that it actually happened. Like he had lived in a different universe, this kid. Ladies and gentlemen, the people in that precinct, the 7-5 where I worked, I promise you, Mayor Bloomberg, the threats to their lives are far greater than the threat to yours. This BS, garbage, horse line that I'm running for president, so my life's in such greater danger, so I'm entitled to firearm protection, while you little peon minions out there are entitled to nothing from the scraps from Longshank's table.
Bingo.
You should throw that right in the garbage. The people I spoke to in the 7-5, who was once a prosperous area of East New York, and had gone downhill to the dreadful Democrat liberal policies and social destruction we saw in the city of New York. People who had been left behind are entitled to the same protection as a wealthy billionaire. And I promise you, I say this with no air of hyperbole or exaggeration for effect whatsoever. The people who lived in the neighborhoods I policed and walked around in and lived in 8 hours a day, 5 and 6 days a week for 2 years of my life, I promise you the threat to their lives was geometrically greater than the threat to the Gracie Mansion in New York inhabiting Michael Bloomberg, who lived there for 12 years. But this, ladies and gentlemen, is the ethos of the liberal elitist snob. This is the credo they live by. You are the great unwashed. You get nothing. I'm a wealthy billionaire. He even says it. I'm rich. I'm running for president. I should be protected by these trained men and women. But you, God forbid, you go and train yourself to defend yourself and your home in a high crime area like the one I work, where the threat to your life is real and tangible and touchable every single day. You get nothing. You heard it in his own words. Disgraceful, embarrassing. Because you're wealthy and running for president, you, your constitutional rights matter because you're just so important. And the danger to me is so much greater. Mike, I'll make a challenge. I'll make a challenge to you today. I'll put it out there. You go spend a couple of weeks in areas of East New York, Brooklyn. You go spend an area, you go spend, and I want you to subject yourself to some of the same, you know, whatever, wear a hat, disguise yourself. I want you to walk around and you determine if you're in more danger in East New York, Brooklyn. And keep in mind, the area's cleaned up a lot since I was there, a lot. Mm-hmm. I want you to walk around. I want you to answer the question after 2 weeks of doing so. You have makeup on, put some makeup on so nobody recognizes you. They don't know how wealthy and famous you are. I want you to determine if you were in more danger there or more danger in your whatever billionaire funded steel castle you live in somewhere. What a joke.
He doesn't have the nuts for that. Forget it.
No, he doesn't. No, he'd never do it. No, of course he would, because his point is ridiculous and stupid. All right, ladies and gentlemen, moving. I just want to put that out there because this is what you're dealing with on the Democrat side, a bunch of elitist snobs who are in it for the little guy. Yeah, okay, sure. You bought that line of garbage? I'm really sorry. If you fell for that, you are a sucker with a capital S. My sincere apologies to you. All right, moving on. So what has been our 2 to 3 week long? This will all be in my next book, by the way. We are putting this together now. It is a ton of work, but it is coming along very nicely. Haven't decided on the title yet. But the general operating thesis is going to be of this next book. They all know each other. All these anti-Trump plotters and spygators and Ukraine hoaxers and impeachment hoaxers, they all know each other. They all have something to hide, ladies and gentlemen. And like ticks, they embed themselves in the news cycle and never, ever go away. Check out this story by the Free Beacon. You're never going to believe this, how these people just keep... It's like a beach ball pushing it underwater. You're like, oh, boom, the beach ball pops up. They never go away, the anti-Trumpeteers. Here's a story in the Washington Free Beacon. Please check this out. We'll be in the show notes today. Bongino.com/newsletter. If you go there, subscribe to the newsletter. We'll send you these articles every single day. So the Free Beacon has this story up about a key Spygate plotter from the Obama era re-emerging on the scene to run for Congress.
Huh?
Remember, if you're a Republican and you support Trump like Mike Flynn, you're to be put in jail and shunned with the Hester Prynne scarlet letter forever. But if you're a Spygate plotter that was involved in the plot to spy on Donald Trump, you run for Congress and you get a big book deal. Headline, Obama alum Evelyn Farkas, remember the names, is running for Congress and away from Burisma. The former DOD official and Atlanta council fellow, where have we heard that name before, didn't disclose her work with Burisma, even as she defended Hunter Biden. Again, you would think these people would slither away into the grass field of history and just go away for their roles in the deepest, darkest political scandal in American history, but they don't, because there's no penalty, because the media will celebrate this. Now, before I get to some of the snapshots from the piece, what's going on here? How is this related, by the way, to the Ron Johnson letter I covered at the beginning of the show? I'll get to that in a moment. Evelyn Farkas, ladies and gentlemen, was the infamous DOD, Department of Defense official, who appeared right after the election on MSNBC and the infamous, and we've played the video on the show a thousand times, where she tells the MSNBC host, we had all this information on Russia and Trump, and we wanted to make sure to get it up to Capitol Hill so it wouldn't disappear. Now, that was awfully suspicious because she exposed the whole Spygate scandal in one media appearance. No one bothered to ask her, wait, how did you in the DOD have information on Trump and Russia? Being that the Trump and Russia thing was a hoax, how did you get that exactly? Are you a federal investigator or a DOD bureaucrat? I'm not exactly sure how you got that. Nobody thought to ask her that. But again, instead of her going away and saying, oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed, I gave up the Spygate thing on MSNBC, she'll get a mega book deal and she'll run for Congress and she'll probably be elected by police state supporting Democrats who love this kind of stuff. Let's go to the Free Beacon piece, takeaway number one. And I want to show you exactly why this is so frightening, Evelyn Farkas reappearing on the scene. Left unmentioned in her public statements is that Evelyn Farkas was an integral part of a muscular effort by Burisma. Burisma? You mean the Ukrainian company that hired Joe Biden's kid that was being investigated when Joe Biden had the prosecutor fired? Investigate him? Yes, that Burisma. Mm-hmm. So Farkas was part of a, quote, muscular effort by Burisma to rehabilitate its reputation in the U.S. and abroad. As part of that effort, Farkas traveled to Ukraine on Burisma's dime and spoke at an Atlanta Council conference bankrolled by the energy company in 2018. What are the chances of that?
I can't believe this.
At the time of her trip, Farkas was a non-resident fellow specializing in Ukraine policy at the Atlanta Council. A Washington think tank received thousands of dollars and hundreds of thousands of dollars, in funding from Burisma. Folks.
Holy cow.
Old Phil Rizzuto style. Holy cow! Remember Phil Rizzuto? Yeah. God rest his soul. You know, my grandmother grew up playing with Phil Rizzuto up in Glendale. I'm not kidding.
Is that right?
Playing baseball. True story.
I like Phil Rizzuto.
Yeah, she did. Yeah. Scooter.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, they all know each other. They all know each other. Just follow the money trail. So Evelyn Farkas, who goes on MSNBC after the election and tells them they're trying to get hoax information about Trump's connection to Russia, in essence, is what she says. Tells us to the host, up to Capitol Hill. Some of it, which was probably classified, in an effort to destroy the trip. She admits it on MSNBC. Instead of slithering away, is now running for Congress. Farkas was part of the Atlanta Council. The Atlanta Council funded by Burisma, the company Joe Biden's son works for, which donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to this think tank, the Atlanta Council, while the company was being investigated. The company is being investigated as it's donating to the Atlanta Council that conveniently has a lot of former Obama-era officials with influence on him. At the same time, Burisma is also using a company called Blue Star Strategies to lobby U.S. lawmakers to make the investigation into Burisma go away. Oh, Blue Star Strategies? You mean the same company Ron Johnson just sent the letter demanding they talk to Blue Star Strategies and their CEO and some of their officials? You mean that company? Yes, that company. Atlanta Council, also funded by Viktor Pinchuk, major wealthy Ukrainian donor who Hillary Clinton's team said, oh, we don't know this person, although there are emails showing them inviting them, Pinchuk, to dinner at Hillary Clinton's house. The same guy who owns the company that was negotiating in a deal overseas with the Iranians that was under review by the United States government and the State Department Hillary Clinton was ahead of at the time. Yes, that guy who funded the Atlantic Council too. Ladies and gentlemen, a lot of you say to me, Dan, we need a chart. We need visuals. Folks, you understand what's going on now? Let me make it very simple for you. A company under investigation overseas in Ukraine, Burisma, hires Joe Biden's kid and funds a think tank that hires Obama officials and then hires a company called Blue Star Strategies to go back to the United States to lobby them to make the investigation into their company, Burisma, go away. And while they're lobbying them, they conveniently mention over and over, hey, by the way, you know, we got Hunter Biden on our board. Again, these people never go away, ever. The Atlanta Council has been a hive for this stuff. Former Obama-era people and deep staters, to be fair, some Republicans too. They go over there. They sit on these boards. The Atlanta Council is getting money from Burisma. Now this lady Farkas is running for Congress after being one of the key players in this deep state plot. The piece goes on. It doesn't even end there. Washington Free Beacon. Read this piece. It's definitely worth your time because you'll be convinced. Again, these people never go away. Burisma mounted a massive public relations and lobbying campaign to fight these charges. There were corruption charges against him and bolster its reputation in Washington. In 2014, the company obviously appointed VP's son, Hunter Biden, to a lucrative board position. Burisma also retained Atlantic Council board member Sally Painter, the CEO of Blue Star Strategies, a Washington, D.C. lobbying firm. Painter had served for years alongside Hunter Biden on the board of the liberal Truman National Security Project. I will lay this all out for you in my next book, I promise you. So just to be clear, the CEO of a lobbying firm lobbying for Burisma to make a criminal investigation into their corruption go away sat on a board with Hunter Biden as Hunter Biden gets hired by Burisma as well to sit on their board while the lobbying company Blue Star is using Hunter Biden's name to lobby U.S. officials to allegedly make the case against Burisma go away, the corruption case, to pressure Ukrainians to make it go away. Don't worry, folks. Nothing to see here. Oh, and they sit on the board of the Atlanta Council where Evelyn Farkas from the DOD, who outed the whole Spygate scandal, sits on that same Atlanta Council funded by a Ukrainian donor tied to Hillary Clinton, who had oversight in the State Department of one of this guy's deals with Iran that conveniently was brushed under the rug. It never ends, folks. It never, ever ends. If these were Republicans, these connections would be exposed every single day on the front page of the dreaded New York Times and the darkness promoting Washington Post. What's going to come out about this, by the way? The Blue Star strategy thing. Because remember, we opened up the show with a letter from Ron Johnson, Republican senator from Wisconsin, who's like, I want to talk to Blue Star. Why were they lobbying U.S. officials to allegedly make this case against Burisma go away while Blue Star was throwing around Hunter Biden's name? Well, one of the allegations is very serious, folks. Potentially catastrophic for the Bidens. One of the allegations is that Blue Star was lobbying a guy by the name of Amos Hochstein, who was a senior advisor to Joe Biden when he was the vice president. Hochstein apparently wanted Burisma investigated and believed they were corrupt and we needed to do something about it in the United States. Who did Blue Star meet with? Oh, Hochstein. And according to the allegations, was trying to convince Hochstein, who is an advisor to Joe Biden, whose son is working on the company being investigated, Biden, on their board. Apparently, they met with Hochstein and said, hey, you really need to make this thing go away. You know, Hunter works for us, by the way. Sounds to me like an influence peddling operation. But again, expect to hear none of this in the mainstream media. But I always tell you, remember the names. Remember the name Evelyn Farkas? For years, it continues to come up. They never go away. Remember the name Amos Hochstein, because he is going to be the key to this whole thing. Because apparently, he believed that we should have been investigating Burisma while Hunter Biden was getting rich off it. And Blue Star got hired and then went back and tried to talk Amos Hochstein out of it. Sounds to me like level 22 influence peddling if I've ever seen it. All right, our last sponsor today, and I got a couple more good stories, including some news on Hillary Clinton, but don't get too excited about this. I'll get to it in a minute, but the Hillary stuff, I saw a lot of people, and I'm urging caution with everybody. Joe's favorite sponsor ever, of course, Rock Auto. Joe is very handy, motorcycle guy, car guy. Joe was stoked when we bought on Rock Auto.
That's right.
Because Joe uses Rock Auto for auto parts.
All the time.
Why? Because with the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models out there, it's impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Joe, how easy is Rock Auto to use?
It's really easy. They had the parts for my old Pontiac when nobody else did. Yeah, it was great.
Everything. You hear that? Joe, what? Listen, folks, we're not messing with you. No. We only take sponsors on that we can vouch for. Why endure pointless or seemingly intimidating customer questioning? You own an LX, an EX, and all that stuff. While the counterman orders the parts of his computer, takes forever, gets to the warehouse, go back to the store, you're going to go pick it up. No, you don't need any of that. You have access to rockauto.com at home right now. It's in your pocket right now on your phone or your computer. Do you know that? Chain stores have different price tiers for the pros and for do-it-yourselfers. Not Rock Auto. Not Rock Auto. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everyone. And you know what? They're reliably low every time. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com's for everyone. Does not require membership or an account login. It's a family business serving auto parts customers for over 20 years. RockAuto.com. rockauto.com. Everything you need, from engine control modules and brakes to tail lamps, motor oil, even carpet. It's whether it's for your classic or your daily driver, go to rockauto.com. Their catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate. See all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specs, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for pros and do-it-yourselfers. Don't spend up at twice as much for the same parts. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Bongino in your How Did You Hear About Us box so the company knows that we sent you over there. We always appreciate that. They have an amazing selection and reliably low prices. This will be my say. All the parts your car will ever need. Rock Auto. All the parts your car will ever need. Paula thinks I have a good voice. That is nonsense. I have the worst voice ever, but I do love their jingle.
I'm staying
all the parts
out of this
your car
one,
will ever need. Yeah, I know, because Joe is a pro. Joe knows my, but Paula's my, she loves me. She's like, no, your voice is great.
Yeah, it ain't bad.
What's that? She heard me singing last. No, it's bad, Joe. Rockauto.com. Go check them out. She did last night.
Bad,
I'm not
Joe.
Messing with you, folks. Last night I was washing the dishes, and I know you're being nice because you're my buddy, and I appreciate that. But
it's
totally
Joe.
It is. It's bad. So I was doing the dishes last night, and I was singing. I don't even remember what song I was singing. And I said, I know my voice is terrible. And she goes, no, I really like it. And I thought that was a very genuine moment of love from Paula lying to me like that. But thank you very much. Made me feel good either way. All right, back to the news.
Oh.
As Joey says, everything you need to know in an hour. This story broke yesterday. Our good friends at Red State, a terrific website we love. We'll put this up at the show notes again, bongino.com/newsletter. Please check out the show notes every day. Bombshell!
Oh.
Federal court orders deposition of Hillary Clinton on emails and Benghazi by Stu Smirk. Sorry if I'm saying your name wrong, Stu. My it's probably a pen name. It's your nom de plume. I'm not getting too excited about this, ladies and gentlemen. And let me tell you why.
Yeah.
So you see the story. It's pretty simple. A federal judge has said, listen, Hillary Clinton's prior testimony on emails, her email scandal, her private server, obviously, and the Benghazi situation is insufficient, that she's going to be deposed again. Now, here's the problem, ladies and gentlemen. Hillary Clinton is an expert liar. Expert liar. If you notice what she did last time during her depositions about all of the prior scandals when she was put on the record by the FBI, ladies and gentlemen, she never answers a question. I forget who I saw on Twitter, one of the more astute analysts out there, said she's just going to do the selective amnesia thing again. Having said that, it's a positive development. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to be, you know, Danny Downer, you know, Debbie Downer for the day, the male version. But just be cautious, because I don't like to get ahead of the audience and get people all teed up and excited for nothing. I'm just urging sincere caution on this from the bottom of my heart, because I know Hillary Clinton. I worked with her. She is a trained, skilled liar. I don't remember. I don't recall. That'll be the whole thing. The whole thing will be, now, if we can get some really talented interrogators in there, assuming deep staters want to do that, you know, you may be able to catch her once or twice, but I'm not that optimistic, folks. Again, I just don't want to set you up for failure. This is great news. She'll have to answer some questions, but I can almost guarantee you her answer to every single question is going to be, I don't recall. I don't remember. Gosh, golly, didn't know that happened. Hillary, here's your actual email. You wrote this. I don't remember writing that. It says, I remember writing this in the email. I don't remember writing this in the email. That's Hillary Clinton. She is a skilled liar. And I mean, a liar like you've never seen before, and has zero character whatsoever. An absolutely spineless human being. She has no compunction whatsoever about lying. And don't get too optimistic. All right, enough on that. I don't want to beat that to death. Told you yet, this is going to be a loaded show today. And Paula doubted I would get through all this, but I'm going to, because I am here for you. Quickly, yesterday, Obamacare development. Looks like it's going to the Supreme Court. I said I would get to give you the deets today. Here are the deets. JustTheNews.com, John Solomon's terrific news site by Sophie Mann. Supreme Court to revisit Affordable Care Act, otherwise was Obamacare with a new case. What's the gist of this? What's going on? Folks, when Obamacare went to the Supreme Court for the first time, the allegation was that it was unconstitutional because the penalty, the individual penalty, the individual mandate.
Mm-hmm.
There was a penalty in the Obamacare. original legislation, if you did not buy insurance.
Yeah.
Conservatives sued and said, that's unconstitutional. You can't tax people or penalize people for not eating broccoli. You can't, that's not the way our system works. The penalty, I should say. You can't penalize people. It's unconstitutional. Realizing it was unconstitutional, John Roberts, who is rarely on our side anymore, Chief Justice, who I don't know what he's up to. Roberts basically rewrote Obamacare and said, well, it's not really a penalty, it's a tax. It's not a tax. Obama had clearly said, President Obama, in a televised interview, I believe with George Stephanopoulos, or I could be wrong, that it was not a tax. I'm not raising taxes, George, this is not a tax. His own words, it was a penalty. Roberts, in his eagerness to save Obamacare, because I believe he's a quiet liberal, and he needs the affirmation of the darkness promoting Washington Post and New York Times, said, no, no, it's not really a penalty. The way it works is it's a tax, so it's legal. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
None of that was true, of course, but
right.
John Roberts rescued Obamacare. Well, what's the problem? Ladies and gentlemen, Trump wiped out the individual mandate and zeroed out the tax. So ladies and gentlemen, you can't have a law funded by a tax if the tax is zero. No tax, no law. Now this is going to the Supreme Court. Of course, a lot of rhinos are freaking out. Oh my gosh, if Obamacare's repealed before the election. By the way, it's not going to be repealed before the election. It's in the October to June term. It's going to, so everybody relax with that. If it's repealed, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? What do you mean, what are we going to do? There's 1,000 different solutions out there. Health savings accounts, tax deductions for doctors and hospitals that take on charity cases. There's 1,000,000 different free market ideas. Where have you guys been, living in a cave? Stop panicking, rhino cowards. The free market works. Stop the insanity. If it's dumped and deemed unconstitutional, this is a great news. It's a disastrous program. Stop being chumps all the time. My gosh, grow a spine. Going to say something else.
Well done.
Trying to keep it family. Yeah. I know. I had to think about that. I'm sorry. I'm very excited about today's show. I've been all over the place. I've got so much stuff I want to get out. All right. Just a quick update. We had spoken 2 or 3 shows ago about Anthony Ferrante, the developments with Anthony Ferrante. Now, just a quick primer on who Ferrante was, why this matters, because I have an update. It's not really an update, but it's pulling from an old article that's relevant again because Ferrante reappeared. All right, quick 1-2 on this. Anthony Ferrante was an FBI agent assigned by Jim Comey to the National Security Council, was there under the Obama administration, and was a holdover for Trump. Anthony Ferrante has since left the FBI and is now working for BuzzFeed, shockingly, to do what? To continue to advocate for the failed dossier, the debunked, discredited Christopher Steele dossier, which we know is a hoax. He is still doing it. What he's getting paid, I don't know. The reason he has reappeared and why the story is new again is he reappeared, as I discussed a couple days ago with you, he reappeared in a quote in the Washington Examiner and elsewhere saying, hey, you know, with the dossier, man, we're still looking into this stuff. It's fake. It's a hoax. Get over it, Ferrante. He keeps trying to rescue the dossier. And the reason is it's going to come out with the Durham report, although it has already with the IG report. It's going to come out again. That the dossier, ladies and gentlemen, was all they had, and is the only reason the FBI started spying on Donald Trump. This whole George Papadopoulos story is nonsense. Disregard it. It's a look squirrel thing. It's a garbage fake story. We got a tip from Australia. Nonsense. You were spying because of the dossier. Everybody following me? This is going to come out soon. So all of the rock has been lifted up. The insects are scurrying, and they're all trying now to rescue the dossier, despite the fact that we know it's a hoax. Again, this is like dossier part 7. Shockingly, you'd be like, it can't possibly be happening. We know it's hoax. No, it is. So Ferrante reappeared. I said to you last week that Ferrante is an interesting character because he works at the National Security Council, or did, of the Obama-Trump administration. And under the Trump administration, we know the leaks against Donald Trump that were damaging his conversation with the Australians, with the government of Mexico, all that leaked out of the National Security Council. And where, in fact, did the impeachment Ukraine fake hoax quid pro quo that never happened come from? The National Security Council. What's fascinating about Ferrante is he was the project manager, let's say, for the FBI for the implementation of Presidential Policy Directive under Barack Obama 41. implemented on July 26, 2016, the same day the dossier from Christopher Steele, one of the dossier memos, appears indicating that the Russians are engaged in a cyber attack in the United States. Same day that dossier appears, Obama initiates Presidential Directive 41. And he says, gosh, the Russians are trying to hack us, so we're going to put this cybersecurity initiative out there. Was that dossier kind of reverse justification for Obama to put out this directive about the Russian cyber attack, prepping the press for the Russian collusion hoax later? Everybody following me? Ferrante's got skin in the game. Ferrante's the FBI agent responsible for implementing Presidential Policy Directive 41. Obama, July 26, 2016, look, the Russians are coming for us. In a couple weeks, we're going to start to tell you this narrative about Trump's colluding with the Russians, but here's a little prep work for you. Ferrante's the guy in charge of that. It comes out the same day Christopher Steele delivers one of his memos about the Russians and their cyber attack. This is all being coordinated, folks. All of it. Ferrante then reappears later, again, Anthony Ferrante, trying to put some meat on the bone of this discredited dossier. Why is this important now? Let me go back to an older piece from 2019 by Paul Sperry in Real Clear Investigations. This is important. We're going to get a headline. I'm going to go to Washington Examiner piece and back to this again. This will be in the show notes again today. Older piece, worth your time, July 2019. Justice Department watchdog has evidence Comey probed Trump on the sly. This is huge. Pay attention to this headline. Let's go back again to why Mr. Anthony Ferrante is such a big deal. He will be a star in my next book and keeps managing to skirt the mainstream media radar. Check out this Washington Examiner piece we highlighted last week. Good piece. Comey's inside man at White House emerges as DOJ Inspector General finalizes FISA abuse report by Chaitlin and Dunleavy, two great writers over at the Washington Examiner. From the piece, what else was Ferrante suspected of doing? Was he the point man on something? Look at this from the Examiner. Anthony Ferrante, FBI official, worked as a cybersecurity advisor on the National Security Council. Oh, shocker. Officials said Ferrante was working in the White House even while the FBI held him on reserve status. All the while, he was sharing information about Trump and his aides back to FBI headquarters. Folks, do you understand how profound this is, what I'm telling you?
Oh, dude.
The FBI and Jim Comey were running an operation against the President of the United States and a major party presidential candidate, Donald Trump, when he was the Republican nominee. Do you understand what's going on here? Are you missing this, media people? Again, why are we bringing this now? Because Ferrante, like Evelyn Farkas, they don't go away. They're not shy at all. Farkas was a major player in the Spygate scheme and is now running for Congress and will be celebrated by the media, who will never ask her critical questions at all about her role in advancing the biggest political scandal in American history. You guys spied on a presidential candidate. Nobody will ask her critical questions. Ferrante reemerges this week and last week, defending the dossier again. And no one's curious why he was implementing a presidential directive on cybersecurity the same day a dossier memo emerges about a Russian cyber attack. Fake memos, by the way. And now is still working to defend the dossier. Is anyone asking him about this? While he was allegedly Comey's point man in the National Security Council spying on Donald Trump? Is anyone in the media going to ask Jim Comey, were you running a black op against President Trump? Were you spying on the White House using your guy Ferrante? Nobody asks any questions. Let's go back to this Real Clear piece from July. Paul Sperry was all over this. Hat tip to him. He has two U.S. officials as sources who were briefed on the IG's investigation of FBI misconduct and said, listen to this. That Jim Comey was essentially, quote, running a covert operation against the president, starting with private defensive briefings he gave Trump just weeks before his inauguration. They said IG Horowitz has examined high-level FBI text messages and other communications indicating Comey was actually conducting a counterintelligence assessment of Trump during the January meeting in New York. Holy crikeys, ladies and gentlemen. Do you believe this? Comey's meeting with President Trump in January of 2017, at the same time they're interviewing Christopher Steele's primary source. Christopher Steele's source is telling the FBI in January 2017, the entire dossier is garbage. They know this conclusively. This is in the same time period Jim Comey's going up to meet with Trump, not to warn him that he's being spied on, but to conduct his own private counterintelligence black operation against the president-elect and soon to be president of the United States, using people like Ferrante, who is very severe allegations that he was using the NSC as a channel to report back to the FBI on President Trump. I mean, again, only the biggest story of our time. I'm serious. If you're not reading about this with Sperry's work, Jeff Carlson, Molly Hemingway, Chuck Ross, and others, Sarah Carter, John Solomon, you have missed the biggest political scandal in American history. Do we have that lady's tweet? I just want one last thing on just a, you know, my coronavirus insanity update of the day. Look at this tweet. This is a county councilwoman, apparently, or city councilwoman in Colorado. Councilwoman at Candy C. DeBaca. She retweets a woman who says, for the record, or subtweets, for the record, if I get corona, I'm attending every MAGA rally I can. That's the lovely Susan Daniel, who is, you can see her tweet there. That's really cute. Yeah, that's really wonderful. I mean, what an idiot. And of course, this councilwoman subtweets it and says, solidarity, yes, with the emojis.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Enough said on that. That's what we're dealing with. Remember, these are the compassionate folks. These are the rational planners and actors we're all supposed to be voting for. What a joke. Totally pathetic. All right, folks, thanks again for your patience. Tuesday is always a stacked news day because we got to get all the stuff we didn't get on Monday. We always have a lot of our great sponsors who want to be here. We appreciate their support. We appreciate your patience. And we hope you support our sponsors and our show. We really, really thank you for everything. Last week was a banner week for us. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Bongino today. And I will see you all tomorrow for updates on what happens during today's Super Tuesday. Don't miss the show tomorrow.
You just heard the Dan Bongino Show. You can also get Dan's podcasts on iTunes or SoundCloud. And follow Dan on Twitter 24/7 at DBongino.